Welcome to No More Booze, the podcast. I'm Olivia Farrelly, and in every episode, I explore the role that alcohol has in our lives. I interview people who have decided to live their life with no more booze. We'll explore their relationship with alcohol, how it made their life better, how it made their life worse, any lessons they've learned along the way, and what advice they would give to others who are contemplating a life without alcohol. So whether you are sober curious, you're sober serious, or you're already living your life alcohol-free, this podcast will provide inspiration and motivation as you begin to untangle and reassess your relationship with the booze. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to No More Booze, the podcast. Today, I have a fantastic duo sitting in front of me on Zoom. I have Sandra Healy and Sarah Mills, who are the co-founders of the TAB platform. So it's the Taking a Break from Booze. Ladies, you are so welcome. It's the second time I've had a duo. The first time they were married, but you two aren't married, are you?
No, not as far as we know. Not to each other anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's a work relationship, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a work marriage.
Yeah.
Work marriage. They're the best type. I have a couple of work wives. They're amazing. I love them. Okay. So listen, we might start. So the layout of the podcast today is I might go through your stories separately, and then we can talk about TAB at the end and what you're seeing in the alcohol-free world, and maybe just what are the kind of trends you're seeing, because obviously I see a few, and obviously all our guests see a few, and what's kind of happening with people who are giving up booze, you know. So Sandra, I'll come to you first with your lovely Irish accent, but not in Ireland, are you?
No, I'm not in Ireland. I live in Barcelona, and the reason I live here is a man. Sure, what else would it be? My husband is from here, and that's how I've ended up living here. Well, I won't say ended up. It sounds terrible. It's a lovely place to live. I'm very happy here. But I am originally from Ireland. I'm from Wexford. But I lived in Dublin for like 20 years as well, you know. So I've been around a little bit.
And ending up in Barcelona, that sounds absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it is lovely. I mean, I've been coming backwards and forwards from here for a really, really long time, many years. But I just kind of settled here in the last 2 years. So, you know, getting to grips with the language and, you know, trying to make a few friends and that kind of thing and get used to the culture and all the rest of it. But it's lovely, lovely.
Lovely. So do you want to give us a sense of your relationship with alcohol? So where it took you? So the good, the bad, and maybe the desperate.
The ugly, yeah. I mean, my relationship with alcohol started off where everybody's did, you know, it looked more or less the same as all of my peers to begin with. You know, it was fun. And it was very much part of my social life as a young person. And particularly when I went to university, I'm a nurse. I trained in the UK, and sure, I had a ball when I was there, you know, but I always had a sense that I was probably using alcohol in an unhealthy way because I was quite shy. I think I'm quite introverted naturally, and alcohol very much helped me be a bit more extroverted and helped me fit in, I suppose. And I suppose it wasn't until I hit a bad period in my life in my late 20s when I used alcohol in a really kind of unhealthy way for the first time, in that my drinking kind of escalated and I was using it because I was miserable, basically. And I had an inkling then that, you know, this wasn't good. And then fast forward over the years, you know, I became a mom. I was, you know, and that was a huge life change for me. I was spending an awful lot more time at home. And I found that my evenings tended to revolve around looking at the clock to see when it would be a good time for me to have me time. You know, I was a mom, and I was a single mother for most of it. From the time my son was 5 years of age, I co-parented, but I was basically a single mom, and I worked full time as a nurse. It was a, you know, it was a stressful enough job, but I had a mortgage to pay and all of those things. So my life was really busy. And for me, my me time, my downtime tended to revolve around drinking wine because, you know, I couldn't go out, you know, socially as often and all of the things. And it just, I don't know, it just became really embedded into what I did every day, you know, and as a result of it, I was tired the next day. I felt, you know, and it really impacted for me. The biggest impact was on my mental health because I've always suffered with anxiety and, you know, and time to time low moods, the same as everybody, I suppose. Well, my anxiety, I think, was kind of always a problem for me. And the alcohol really helped. Well, I thought it helped with that. But in hindsight, really what it did was it fueled it because I noticed over time, the longer I went on, you know, having my wine every evening, the worse my mental health seemed to be for me anyway. My anxiety was worse. And I never, I began to sense that I wasn't living life. I felt I was in survival mode a lot of the time. And I tried so often to moderate and to kind of explore this relationship I had with alcohol. What, like, why did I, why was it that I, if I opened the bottle of wine, I had to finish it? Do you know what I mean? I wasn't one of those people who had a glass or two glasses. And I don't want to get into data points or anything, but, you know, I wasn't able to do that. I wasn't able to moderate. I either didn't drink, which I could manage to do for periods of time, or I drank, you know, until I was whatever. So, and that's how it was for me. And I stayed doing that for a really long time. And I got to the point where I knew that it was a problem for me because it was the way it was impacting on my life, on my physical health, on my mental health. And I really wanted to do something about it, but at that stage, I just found that I couldn't get on top of it. Like I could for periods of time only have it on the weekends, or I might go a month, or I might do this, that, or the other. But invariably, I always ended up going back to it. It was like, I don't know, I couldn't get on top of it at all. And that went on just for absolutely years. And I listened to all the podcasts, read all the books, blah, blah, blah. I never spoke to anybody about it because, in my experience, people don't talk about things like this. Do you know what I mean? And I think that people's opinions on alcohol are really polarized. It's like you can handle your drink or you're an alcoholic, and there doesn't seem to be any conversation of what's going on in the middle. So I never really talked about it to anybody.
And when you say that, like everybody who I coach, and I do a lot of group coaching, and like that, you could have six, seven people in there, and most of them have never talked to any other human about, really honestly about the way that they drink, because it's all contained in their head. And like you're similar, or your story is so similar. I've heard it hundreds of times now at this stage. A beautiful, shy person, you know, a little bit introverted, as all teenagers are, right? But all of us takes this drink, thinks, oh my God, it all the insides come out. It's very similar to mine, you know. Oh my God, it just helps me be myself more. But the passage of time, as we all now know, makes ourselves be ourselves more. So look, I see a lot of myself in your story as well. So you had read all the books, you had listened to all the podcasts. When did it click for you?
It didn't click for me until I found a community of women. It didn't click for me until I found women who I could talk to about this thing, and they and I was able to listen to them basically saying all the things that were in my head and all the things that I experienced, because I think this type of drinking is kind of insidious and it lives more in your head than it does anywhere else. And when I found women who were the same as me, and I was able to explain that and listen to them, it literally changed everything. You know, and the, and it was, and I found it through an online sober platform that doesn't, it's not around anymore, unfortunately. But it was when I came into community, basically. That's when everything changed, and that's when it clicked for me. And I didn't realize that that's what I needed until I found it. And to be honest, I don't even remember finding it because it was on one of my wine Google searches that I found it. And I got this email to say, you know, oh, you've joined such and such thing. And I was like, oh, have I? You know,
Well,
but
that's the
yeah,
universe. That's
that's the universe.
the
Yeah.
universe
Yeah.
knocking on your door. And
Absolutely.
what did the community provide for you? Was it accountability? Was it, you know, like in those times where, you know, we pushed that big red fuck it button? I just
Yeah.
pushed it about 10 minutes ago and had a sourdough sandwich, even though I said I'd have no sourdough today, you know?
Yeah.
So what was it about the community that was so helpful?
I think it was just being able to talk. I honestly, you know, and to be seen and to feel normal, like there's nothing wrong with me. Like, yeah, with like loads of people do this, we just don't talk about it. Do you know what I mean? And it was having somewhere to go and to explain all these things, and people go, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And yeah, the accountability of it, because as I made connections and made friends, Sarah was one of them, that gave me the accountability because I didn't want to lose that once I had it, you know.
And you know, I've a few friends who are nurses, and I've met a few along the way. Like every profession is a massive drinking profession. Like nurses, teachers, like everybody I meet from all walks of life are like, oh, but you don't understand the job that I'm in. We all go drinking, and that's how we bond and all that kind of thing. So, and even though obviously it's a health profession, it really is ignored in health circles, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it is a massive problem and it is well documented, but like nobody talks about it. Do you know what I mean? And like when I look back on my nursing career, say, like when I started in the 1990s, the hospital that I worked in had a social club. And like we would all do our day's work and then we'd all congregate in there and we would drink. And, you know, and then get up in the morning and then just do the same thing over again. And we were looking after people who were sick because of their lifestyle, because they drink too much or because they smoke or because, you know, whatever. But you don't put those things together. You do your job and you think you're separate from all of that, especially when you're young. You think you're bulletproof, you know, nothing, none of that is ever gonna be a problem for you know.
And so obviously for us to stick at a lifestyle, it must have some advantages. So what has a sober life or an alcohol-free life given you?
Oh, it's given me everything. I mean, you know, when I was still drinking and when I was that person, like I wouldn't have even had the confidence to have this conversation with you now. Do you know what I mean? It has literally given me, it's brought me back to myself. I didn't even know who I was, you know, at the end of it. And when I started this journey, I had no idea what made me happy, what my interests were. You know, I had lost myself somewhere along the way, and I've got all of that back now in spades. And it's the confidence, it's the self-belief, it's the freedom. It is the freedom I feel just to get on with my life without having this thing like on my shoulder all the time, you know, and the mental space that it has left for me is it's just massive, like, You know, my mood and everything is so more stable. I don't have the big ups and downs anymore. I don't have those days where I just feel absolutely exhausted. And, you know, I don't have any of that anymore. You know, I feel my life is really authentic. I'm just me and I'm okay with me now. And that is just everything, you know.
And I think probably, and I think everyone will agree with this, but like we're chasing our tails a bit when we're drinking. We don't, like you said there, you don't know what ends up. You don't know what you like, what you enjoy, because like you drink. Do you know what I mean?
You,
That's
yeah, you do. And that's your social life, you know, and you think it's fun. But like when you actually look at it in any kind of a critical way, I mean, it isn't fun at all. It's actually really lazy. Do you know what I mean? It's really lazy. Like there's no thought goes into it. You don't change your environment. You don't like engage in interesting activities. You just take a substance to change how you feel about everything. You know?
Absolutely. Thanks, Sandra. That is really, really inspiring. And I love your honesty. And I really saw a picture of young you, actually. And thanks. So we'll move on to you now, Sarah. You're welcome. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Olivia. It's lovely to be here. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are?
Okay, yeah, fine, sure. So mine, I started drinking when I was at university. Absolutely loved it. There was no getting away from it. I love drinking. It was magic. You know the Nuggets video where you go through the magic medicine, then you go through the misery part. That it was magic, and it was magic. And I again, like Sandra says, like so many of us, I am probably an introvert. But I tell you what, when I was drinking, I wasn't, you know, it brought out this confidence in me. It brought out an ability that I'd never had. So I loved it. It worked, did its trick, and it worked for a while, you know, it did. It worked for a while. Roll on a few years and, you know, married, three kids, husband away. The mummy juice really, really got me, you know. It was okay to sit at home at night and drink your wine when your kids were, as soon as you put your kids to bed. I fell for that hook, line, and sinker. And that's where it start, and I knew it wasn't right, but I ignored it because all the messaging is, and all my friends were doing it. But I knew deep down, I thought, this isn't really right. But you know what? Maybe tomorrow I'll look at it. Well, tomorrow turned into 20 years, you know, that sort of tomorrow, that sort of the procrastination of dealing with it. And yeah, it just happened like that. It went on, and it became a medicine. It did become a med, you know, to get through the day. Responsibility was what I drank at. I mean, I drank at everything, let's face it, happy, sad, in between, I drank at it. However, the responsibility is what I drank at the end of every day, job, work, motherhood, you know, daughter, whatever it is, I drank at that. And I now know that. I did not know that then. And of course, when you're looking back, you've got clarity. So, and I, you know, I'm at absolute peace with that. I don't carry any shame with me from my drinking days. I just don't. But when it carried on like that, my kids all grew up and everything. And COVID hit. Well, like myself, like lots of women, you know, as all of a sudden you're working from home, or you're basically given a ticket to drink. You know, nobody's going to question you. Nobody's, you know. So that's what I did. But when it got bad for me was something happened within my family, and I won't talk about that. That's not my story. But it was very, very difficult for me to deal with, and I didn't have any coping skills other than wine. And wine is what helped me get through, although it didn't help me get through, of course. Now I know that, but that's what I honestly believed at the time. And that's when I knew I have got to do something about this, because no one else from the outside, I looked great, you know, and like not that I look great, I looked like I had everything together, you know, nobody would have known. And, you know, hearing from so many women now, it was everywhere. It is everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
It's that the culture, the line that we were sold, that, and I don't take myself for a fool. However, I felt, and it was convenient for me as well to fall
Yeah.
all those years. It was very convenient for me to do that.
Yeah.
So it's not at, you know, I'm not blaming necessarily 100% of the blame on marketing and everything. But, you know, it was very convenient for me to do that. But yeah, I got to a point where this, I've got to do something about this. And I think I'm slightly different in that I almost planned what I was going to do. And I did it. I didn't go to and from. I signed up for a course and I did it.
Okay.
And that was it for me.
Okay. And then you found everything that you needed in that course.
I found in that course, it gave me the break I needed.
Okay.
I found clarity in the course. The course, yeah, it was good. But it was the fact that I had committed to do something. And
yeah.
it was, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was sick and tired of being me. I was flatlining my way through life. I wasn't motivated by anything or anyone. I was functioning. I was getting up every day. I was going to work. I was doing this. I was doing that. But I was flatlining. And it wasn't, I couldn't feel passion for anything. I didn't feel happy. I didn't feel sad. I didn't feel anything. And I was, that scared me. That really scared me.
And that's what alcohol does. It really it really ravages. And we don't know it until we actually come out of it. That you begin to see. I always talk about this, like Catherine Gray's first book was The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober. The second one was The Unexpected Joy of the Ordinary.
Yeah.
Because that's what we find. We find joy in the ordinary. And like I didn't look any different to everybody else around me. It sounds like you didn't either, Sarah. Neither did you, Sandra. So here we are, three women, right, of a certain vintage, let's say, right? But we're exactly like everyone else behind around us, right? But still, we're being ravaged from the inside by alcohol, yet nobody thinks we have a problem. So I used to approach my friends and be all, oh, I'm in bits. I can't do it anymore. And they'd be like, you're grand, would you stop being dramatic? Like, you're fine. Like, this is the normal way to be. But we've normalized in a completely abnormal state.
Yeah.
You know, I was sick recently and it was as sick as I would be with a hangover. And oh my God, how did I function so long being that sick?
Yeah.
But I was this martyr. So I not only was I sick, but I was sick and berating myself and you know, internally loathing and all these horrendous things. And I actually love the fact that there's three of us here because our stories are kind of similar. And I suppose there's that power in hearing people's stories, you know, that look at none of us have to hit what traditionally is seen as a rock bottom to actually begin to get help. And to to begin to address this. So you took the break, and then what happened, Sarah?
And then I saw a lady, Susan Christina, I heard her, and I thought, I liked the sound of her. She was powerful. She sounded empowered. I didn't feel empowered. I felt, oh my God, what the hell? And I was really anxious about this course finishing because I thought, what the hell do I do now? I couldn't trust myself as far as I could throw myself. I knew that much.
Yeah.
And I knew my next stage was to reach out and say, I actually need help. Not in an AA way, not in a, I can't do anything. And I'm not saying AA is like that. What I mean is I'm not surrendering to anything,
yeah.
but I would like somebody to show me the next step. That's what I would like. And
yeah.
I joined a community that is no longer open, but I joined Ola Sober, and that's where I met Sandra. And there were women in there. I could be myself 100%.
Yeah.
Without anyone saying, don't be silly, you're not that bad. Or,
yeah.
or, oh, I didn't know it was that bad for you. Or being questioned or being quizzed or being interrogated. I didn't want any of that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be heard, to be seen in a safe space. That is all I wanted. And that is all I needed. So, yeah, that's what helped.
But like, That's all any of us want. And you know what as well? So like you see yourself in other people, you notice that it's not an us and them phenomena. It is an all of us, the majority, you know, there's, and we all know, obviously it's a spectrum of drinking, right? And everybody is on a different place, but you know, there's a lot of commonalities in how people are and how people feel. And especially when we talk about gray area drinking, and obviously that's what I kind of identify with as well. Do you know what you said there? You said, I couldn't trust myself, but I know the answer to this, the question I'm going to ask, right? But do you trust yourself now?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. Not only did I not trust myself, I questioned every, and I'm not just talking about drink here. I didn't trust myself in any aspect. I didn't have, my confidence was, I didn't know where it had gone. I just didn't have a clue. I was wandering around. It was almost like I was wandering around blind, just feeling my way, waiting to get through a day. I was waiting. I was in a waiting room daily. I was still functioning. I was still doing things, but it just felt like everything was heavy and on hold. Yeah. And I just, yet decisions, even down, sounds silly, but I bet there's women out there, decisions like what to eat. Yeah. I could not make a decision. You know, of course I did, but it felt a lot harder than it should have been. Yeah. It felt a lot more effort. It felt heavy. Everything felt heavy. And it wasn't heavy, but I'd got myself into this situation. And it was my responsibility to get out of it. I always knew that. That's one thing I did know. I always knew, you've got to get out of this yourself.
And I think that's a great point, right? And it is. And like, this is a lot of the work that I do with the women that I work with. It's about like sovereignty and autonomy and responsibility. Yes. And it's again, it's
not yourself, Olivia. You've got to ask for yourself.
Absolutely. So like you were responsible for you. I'm responsible for me. Sandra, you're responsible for yourself. No one's going to come and do it for us, right? And we have to practice it. So it's the practice of, no thanks, I'm driving tonight. No thanks, fuck off. No thanks, you know, all of these little things that we're saying to the people around us. And, you know, I have 1,000 instances of stories people have told me at this stage. Oh, but I met Cecilia in the supermarket and she said, I better be drinking the next night we go out. And do you know what I mean? So like we have these, they're nearly like microaggressions of how people judge people who give up the booze. So we have all that to deal with as well. But I love what you said there about your responsibility. Can you talk a little bit more about that, just so people really get it?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, when you become, so I say language to me is incredibly important, really, really important. The term alcoholic has no place in my vocabulary for me. I understand it's empowering for some women and they can move forward with it. I'm all about moving forward. I really am. But my responsibility, personal responsibility comes from, I was addicted to an addictive substance. Absolutely. And Lauren McCowan says this perfectly, you know, it's not my fault. It's my, you know, what it does to your brain. That's what's going to happen if you drink like I drank. But it is my responsibility to do something about it. And I've got to take that first step. I didn't know what that first step looked like other than, oh my God, I'm going to sign up for a course. Right. Okay. Here we go. I was scared. I did not know what I was going to do without drinking. You know, I used to look at people who said, I've done dry January for the month. And I used to think, how the hell have they done that? I just didn't get it. I did not get it. But I knew I had to do something rather than do nothing and carry on doing what I was doing the same every single day. So I put a date on it. I got something in place and I put a date on it and I stuck with it. Now, I did not know it would lead to this. I just literally went, one day at a time, I am doing this, but I'll get through this course, come hell or high water. And by the end of the course, I wanted more. I felt so much better. I wasn't in a, you know, not all my faculties had come back and I wasn't, you know, going skydiving or anything, but I was sort of looking forward to things and I'd lost that. I didn't look forward to anything. You know, even holidays, I didn't really look, you know, oh God, how much will I drink? Oh, I hope I don't, you know, all of this sort of stuff, the space in your head, the space.
And you know, that's probably the biggest block and the biggest hurdle that people have to get over just when you say holidays. And I'm sure, Sandra, you agree. Like people, that's I was talking to somebody very recently and they were saying, oh yeah, I'd love to do it and I'd love to keep going, but I don't think I can do Christmas and don't think I can do a holiday, you know. So like they people really so when we think a thought 1,000 times, it becomes our belief, and our belief then impacts our actions, and then we this is how we act and behave according to what we believe. So it's about a process of changing your beliefs, isn't it?
Absolutely, but it's also a process, I think, Olivia, that I think you're so right there. It is about changing your beliefs and it's a practice, but it's also about just taking it one day at a time and doing the next right thing. And also by doing that, those small steps, every single decision you make in favor of what you want, what your goal is that day, mine is not drink, that's it. That then you are creating a life for yourself where you no longer want to drink. So come a holiday. You couldn't pay me to go on holiday and drink now. You couldn't. I don't want it.
Could I? 100 million?
But no.
I
Well,
know,
hundred
me
million?
either.
No,
I know, yeah.
absolutely not.
I know, yeah.
Absolutely not. No, I know you. But do you know what I mean? And that sounds so bloody far-fetched when if you'd have said that to me just before I'd stopped drinking, I would have said, oh, go on, do me a favor. But it's true. And it's about trusting that process, making the right micro decisions. I hate that term, but it's true. Because every, you know, in those first few weeks, whatever it is, every decision you make is difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, do I go to the bloody same supermarket that I always go to? Probably not. No, go somewhere else. You know, that all those, it's hard work. But you do create something by trusting that process. You do create something that you don't want to escape from.
Sing it, sister. It sounds incredible what both of you experienced in the online community, and obviously then it closed its doors. So how did this come about that you two decided to establish Tab?
So we, as you know, we met in Ola Sober, the two of us. We both did a course together in Ola Sober as well, and that's kind of how we became friends, because we started at the same time. We're kind of sober around the same time, and we loved it, and we just threw ourselves into it. We were like really committed to it, and we did all the meetings and blah blah blah. And over the space of 3 years, well, 2 years, I suppose, we started to volunteer. We were hosting meetings and we were helping facilitate some of the courses as mentors and things like that. And then unfortunately, Susan, she had to close Ola Sober because she's not very well and she was no longer able to continue. And so we realized that, you know, we kind of had nowhere to go. Do you know what I mean? We loved the community. There was so many women there that we had connected with. It was such a big part of our lives. Sarah came up with the idea, really, that of Tab. And
Well, I was, sorry, Sandra, I was doing some coaching, wasn't it? So I was training as a coach, Olivia, a
okay,
recovery
Fab.
coach. And that's what I thought I was going to do.
But it but anyway, it kind of this idea that Sarah approached me with kind of grew legs, basically. And really all we wanted in the first instance was to have somewhere for the women in that community to go, right? Where we could just continue on having meetings, where we could continue on. So Sarah and I decided that we would set up the platform and offer a space for the women in Ola Sober primarily to go, right? Now, we knew, Sarah, I'm a nurse, Sarah is a teacher. Neither of us do that anymore, we do this. But so we are women of, you know, moderate means, and we knew that we would never be able to actually financially do something like this ourselves. So we said, look, we'll set it all up, you know, come with us and see, you know, how it goes. But we will have to charge like a small fee to be able to actually pay, you know, for the platform and all the stuff that goes with that, right? So what we did was we set up Tab, and a lot of the women came with us, and very, very quickly the Tab just turned into an entity of its own. It grew legs. Sarah mainly has ideas on a daily basis, and I try and keep up with it. We have our own roles within Tab, and it is so all-consuming and so busy that she does what she does, I do what I do, and then we talk to each other every single day, and we just keep it going and going and going. And the more we get into it, the more we love it, and the more we are putting into it. And what we have created, unknowns to ourselves, in fairness, it has actually turned out to be a phenomenal space. And
do you know what it just came into my mind when you were talking? You know the Japanese concept of ikigai? You're ikigaiing.
Yes.
Doing something noble that the world needs, that uses your skills, that you can get paid for, and that carries real meaning. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that we are not earning any money from this at all. We don't have enough people in at the moment. But it's a not for profit anyway.
Yeah.
So the way we are running our Tab membership, it's only £20 a month. Our business is registered in the UK, so it's £20 a month. But any of the money, well, all of the money that we get from the membership goes back into financing Tab and actually being able to run the platform.
Okay, so you volunteer at this?
We are not making any money from this at all. No.
So it's a real, real passion project.
It's a passion project. Going forward, Sarah is a recovery coach. I'm in the process of training as a recovery coach. So we will be doing that as part of the platform, not of Tab. It's just, you know, we'll be practitioners in that in our own right. In terms of the Tab membership, that is a not-for-profit membership.
Yeah, amazing. And you have a great response to that, have you?
I think so. I'm not sure. What would you say, Sarah?
Yeah, we've had a much better response than we thought. We didn't.
Okay.
We did not know. This is our 20th week, right?
Okay. So it's very new.
Every day we have meetings. Every day there are between 10, 20 women in there, every meeting we do. That there's so it's a small, it's intimate, it's safe.
Yeah.
We are, more than anything, we are passionate about that, keeping it safe, keeping it small, hearing women, we meet women where they're at, exactly where they're at when they come in. We guide them, you know, and we've just done a little bit of a rebrand. When I say rebrand, a brand, because let's face it, it's 20 weeks in, where, you know, we're starting with take a break from booze, but we're going all the way through to thriving and amplifying life beyond booze. So it's that, okay, so women in there don't drink anymore. They haven't drank for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. What do they do then?
Yeah.
What do they do then? So we have masterclasses. We're all into amplifying life, looking at the nervous system, seeing how we can regulate ourselves, seeing what's next, getting excited, elevating things for ourselves rather than, because for me and for lots of women I speak to, sobriety has exceeded their expectations. I came into this thinking, oh, I'll just give up drinking, then I can carry on, then I'll be fixed and everything will be fine. I am so glad had that happened, okay, fine, but I wouldn't be here now. That didn't happen. I saw things, what you were talking about before, Olivia, the little things, the awe in everything, the awe. I think I am so glad for my being addicted to an addictive substance. I'm grateful for it, because now I don't think I would be as fulfilled as I am now had I not gone through that, if that makes sense. You know, so there's no shame. My shame is all left there. Don't, you know, did I do things? I'm like, yeah, of course I did. But I'm leaving it there. It's there.
Yeah. And I don't carry shame either. Because, and how I, how it makes sense to me is, well, I held a lot of shame. I was, you know, I swam in shame every day. I was loved a bit of shame, and I'm Irish and a Catholic. So like, hello, I ate shame for breakfast. Come on. But I did a lot of practices that ridded me of shame, you know, but I don't hold it anymore, because sure, I've nothing to be ashamed of. Like, everything I do is in the fullness. Like, I don't have anything that inhibits me. Like, I'm not hammered. I don't say things I regret, you know, but the absence of shame is gorgeous. Come here. I'm just going to, because collectively we're here. We've heard a lot of stories from a lot of women, right? And men too. I work with men as well. But so give our listeners a sense of what you're seeing out there. Like, what are people coming to you with, right? And we kind of alluded to it there. So people are coming, like you were saying, Sandra, certainly to me, I was a really shy teenager, and then I got into teaching or nursing or like whatever other, like whatever other occupations there are, but there was so much drink, and then all my friends were doing it, and then when I had the kids, I just kept drinking the wine and all that kind of stuff. So just give me a sense of what's coming up for ye in terms of what people are facing.
I would say that, you know, there's a very similar kind of vein. The women that come to us are women who on the outside have it all together, right? A lot of the women who are coming to us, you know, they are professional women. They hold really responsible jobs, right? So they're educated, they're intelligent, you know, but alcohol just plays a bigger role in their life than they ever wanted it to. It takes up a lot more headspace than they ever wanted it to. And it's impacting on their life. Quite often women come to us, and their families don't even know that they have a problem. Their husbands don't know they have a problem. Do you know what I mean? Because they hold it all together, you know, and women are really, really good at that, do you know? But on the inside, like, they know that their drinking is not right, and it is not serving them. It is not making them feel well. And they come in because, you know, they just want, they don't know where to start. Just like Sarah and I, we were the same. Like, you know, you want to give it up, you know, you have to give it up, but you're afraid of being judged. You're afraid of like saying anything to anybody. And then maybe when you do, people are going, oh, sure, you're grand. Sure, we're all doing the same thing, you know. And women are coming to us. And like the women that we have in TAB are from the UK, they're from Ireland, they're from the US, they're from Canada. We've got a woman from South Africa. So we're talking like a really broad range of people here who are all coming in more or less telling the same stories, really similar stories, you know. And it, the fear of being judged because of all the stigma and everything, particularly against women. You tell somebody, you know, I think I have a problem with alcohol, straight away they'll think, Jesus, like her children are running around naked and not fed and washed and all the rest of it. Do you know, like women really feel judged around these things. And that's kind of, that's what we see. But women come in, and I think it's a really proactive thing to do, to actually identify you have a problem and to be able to say, I need a bit of help with this, and then to find a community and find a way to see your way through it and to be able to listen to other women. No one comes into our space and says, what do you do for a living? Like, where do you live? What kind of house do you live in? What kind of, no one cares about that. We all come in on a level. Because we're all engaging in these behaviors that are just not serving us, and we want to change them. And most of the time, we just don't know how, we don't know how to go about that. And we've tried 100 times on our own, and here we are, do you know?
That's exactly my experience as well. Like, I have women from all walks of life, and none of them even know what each other does, or if they've families, or how many kids, because that's not really talked about. It's a real space to come in and talk about yourself and what you're experiencing, and that's lovely to leave that party at the door
Oh
and
yeah,
just and
absolutely.
totally be yourself as well. And that's where it heals. Sarah, what about you? Anything you're seeing? Things happening kind of like waves or whatever. Anything that's standing out for you at the minute?
Oh, codependency is a huge one.
Ooh, yes.
Huge, huge, absolutely huge. The problem with codependency, of course, is you don't know you're codependent until you have that space and you have that clarity. I would have put money on the fact that I wasn't. I absolutely categorically am, or was, where all my self-worth came externally. It's what happens when when you're a woman who just goes through life not really paying much attention and drinking her nights away, So codependency is a big one, and less than the feeling of I'm not even going to talk about self-esteem as such, but just that feeling of less than, less than.
And actually, that brings up a good point. A lot of the times when people give up alcohol, women give up alcohol, they begin to see things clearly and they're like, what am I doing? You know, so it's kind of a rebirth as well. You know, and that's very fearful too. So like sometimes, you know, so like you come to a group, you know, you dr do, you know, you give up the booze, you go home, you know, maybe somebody hasn't give up the booze with you. You know, that's a lot of, there's a lot of fear and a lot of pressure too, do you know, to accept that you might go back in the booze again just to keep the status quo.
Absolutely, and that's part of the work. That's also part of the work. And where do you set your boundaries? Do you set boundaries? Do you feel confident enough to set boundaries? But being able to discuss that, no one's going to fix you at TAB or in any other space. No one's going to say, this is what you need to do. This is, but what you can do is share it, and sharing it, exploring it. There's a different process in your brain that take. You'll know this, Olivia. You process things differently. Things become clearer, and you then might be brave to make that decision, because of course we're changing, but our families, our friends, whoever, aren't. They're not changing. They've never asked us to change. A lot of the time, we women haven't been asked to change, so they're almost like two steps behind. So it's that catching up, that lag. I've had it here, where I'm now all of a sudden setting boundaries and saying no, and everybody's going, what do you mean? That sort of, you've never said that before. I tell them where to go, and it takes some getting used to. So there's all those knock-on effects, but it's worth it. It is worth it.
It absolutely is. And I have a backlog of about, I'd say, 108, 110 podcasts, Sarah, and every single person has said exactly what you just said there. It's worth it. Do it. Give it a try. Reach out to a community. It doesn't matter. There's space for everybody. And isn't that an abundance mindset that, you know, nobody's encroaching on anybody's space? There's space for everybody. There's space for everybody to get help. There's space for all different kind of things to emerge and grow and see what happens. Ladies, I love this conversation. I think I've met two friends, have
Oh, definitely, definitely.
I? Do you want to tell the listeners where they can get more information about you, or where they can join the platform if this has really inspired them?
So, if anybody is interested, we are on Instagram and we are on Facebook, and you can find us at tabforwomen.com. And if you would like to contact us directly, we are really good and hot on our email. So, just bang us an email at info@tabforwomen.com, and we will be delighted to answer any of your queries.
Ladies, it has been a pleasure, and long may ye live and last and chat about all the beautiful things that arise when we give up the booze.
Absolutely. Hallelujah.
No More Booze, the podcast, is produced, mixed and mastered at the studios of Irish Audio Drama. For more information, visit irishaudiodrama.com.